This is our Wednesday night special with the Jerry Pippin Show, and we've been dealing with UFOs, and we'll probably talk about UFOs this hour as well, but I have two friends, two people I've worked with, two people I've been associated with that we're going to bring on here in just a minute. I'd like to say hello to Robert Miles and Leslie Mitz. How are both of you?
Oh, great. Fine, thanks.
Doing great, Jerry. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah.
Oh, this is quite a departure, and I'm looking forward to talking to you about it, about the book. And let's go ahead and plug the book right off the top of the show here. Tell people the name of it, and the subtitle I like really well: Super Soldiers and the Freedom War. But tell me the complete title.
You want to go,
either,
Robert?
One of you.
Yeah, go ahead, Leslie.
Well, it's just Lycan Droids, Super Soldiers, and the Freedom War.
And what's a Lycan Droid?
Well, this is basically a name that we kind of coined ourselves. It seemed to be a little bit more accurate to describe the creature because the very few people that have ever heard of it, they'll call it things like a werewolf or, you know, something like that, which really isn't accurate because it really isn't a werewolf, but that's the closest physical description for this creature. Lycan means wolf, and then the android part suggests it may be a bioengineered kind of a creature, possibly. There is a strong theory in that regard. It may have originally been something like Bigfoot, a creature like any other that you don't really know the true origin of it, but a Lycan Droid may be a bioengineered wolfen type creature that is about 7 feet tall and extremely strong. So we just gave it a name that seemed to be a little bit more accurate to describe what it actually is.
And Robert, I know you told me off the air one day that Leslie was working you day and night on writing this book. You've written books before, but this book was a labor of love, I take it.
Yeah, it sure was, Jerry. We spent a lot of time developing a story in which to place this creature, which is not a mythical creature. It's an actual creature that exists and is, in some cases, terrorizing not only wild animals, other wild animals, but people as well. But we developed a story that encompasses a great deal of what we're facing as a population, not only in the United States, but throughout the world. And the story itself is a fictional story, but the setting involves a creature that is, in fact, real.
Now, where does the location of the story take place? Is it in the U.S. someplace?
Yeah, the story is principally developed around the area of Sholo, Arizona, and Chattanooga, Tennessee. And that's
where both of you two live. So have you got? Here's the question, and Leslie, mm-hmm. You might as well answer this too, along with Robert. Have you guys had experience with something like this?
Thank heavens, no. But one was sighted only about 30 miles north of Chattanooga.
And did you see it in the paper or what?
No, actually, it has been. I think, you know, it may even have been in one of Linda Godfrey's books. It's a fairly well-documented sighting by a woman that was driving home from work, and she passed it along the side of the road walking. And it had on a hat and a jacket or a shirt. And that's one thing that's particularly strange about this kind of creature. They are often seen wearing shirts, and they're almost always plaid for some reason. Whereas, you know, Bigfoot doesn't wear clothes, but these creatures apparently do, and which makes you wonder, how do they get clothes? And a very strong possibility is they get these clothes off their victims.
So Robert, you can chime in too as well. They're not necessarily wearing uniforms, even though we talk about it as being soldiers, but they are wearing at least a shirt and a hat or something.
Occasionally,
well, very rarely, though, Jerry, mm-hmm. and part of the backstory is that Leslie had been wanting to do a story on this for a number of years, because in the course of doing her research on the different types of creatures that are out there, she came upon this one particular creature that is extremely violent and is very, very much a hazard to humans. And so what we decided to do was to take that research, and in the book itself, in the back chapters of the book, are a lot of reports that of people that have had firsthand accounts with the creature itself, some of them very violent. And the backstory is that this research that she's done carries out that this creature is not only in the United States, but it's in other parts of the world as well. And there's a strong possibility, and we bring it up in not uncertain terms in the book, that it might be part of a hybrid program that was introduced into the world through possibly what would be considered the Fourth Reich. And that's where the super soldier part of this story comes in. And the Freedom War is the setting for the story, in that within the United States and throughout the world, the Vendetta virus brought down all the computer systems in the world. And it sets us back into an era where we don't have modern communication whatsoever. Computers are completely useless. All the cars that have chips in them no longer run. People are faced with a struggle for survival. And in the course of this, there's a revolution that totally devastates the government and society as we know it. And people are banded together, confronting not only their own survival, but the fact that there's still resistance pockets that the federal forces are trying to take out. And we have some villains in the stories, and we've got quite a story in that in itself. If it weren't the fact that the creature is a part of it, it would still be a good read.
Yeah, Leslie, this thing reads very well, but you have some illustrations in there. A guy named Barton Nunnally, did he do those illustrations?
Yes, he did one of the one that's just kind of like a pale gray. It was from a sighting of the creature, but I've noticed that people who have seen the creature, they do vary not only in the body build, but in the face, you know, in the snout. Some look more like a Belgian Shepherd, which is very similar to a German Shepherd, but some look like just an erect, standing upright Belgian Shepherd. Some look like a bodybuilder, like the one on the cover of the book, a super bodybuilder, super strong, very big through the chest and shoulders and arms and legs, very muscular. So it almost indicates that they may have been bioengineered from just, you know, your basic run-of-the-mill erect original.
Well, what's the difference, you two, between this creature than, say, a werewolf?
Well, werewolves, as far as I know, are not real. These things, you know, they have nothing to do with a full moon or anything like that. It's just a creature that looks like a wolf, but it stands and runs on its hind legs. It can run on all fours, but it's extremely fast, extremely fast. And if you ever encounter one, it's a 50-50 chance whether you survive or not. They're very unpredictable. But they're just basically a human-looking, human-appearing type of a wolf.
They Robert,
can be
do they
extremely
speak?
Intelligent.
No, they don't speak in terms of the human language. But they're basically a pre-programmed device, Jerry, a mechanism that was engineered, we think, and a part of that engineering may even go back to the Dulce story. And in our book, we do tie it in with Dulce. And we also tie it in, as I indicated earlier, with the desire by the establishment at a very, very high level to develop a super soldier for use in warfare as being the most aggressive and violent creature on Earth.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, as Leslie's indicated, they're extremely strong, and their muscular structure lends itself to being able to leap very high and run very, very fast, easily fast enough to keep up with a car.
Mm-hmm. And they can
survive 60 miles an hour or more, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can survive on anything, in any kind of weather, eat anything. They're almost indestructible.
Have you guys ever heard of anybody shooting at them?
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Does it stop them?
It takes a lot, and you've got to hit it just right.
And what do they do to humans? Do they just tear them apart and eat them, or what?
Oh, yeah, rip them to pieces. There's one case, the Land Between the Lakes case in southwestern Kentucky. There was a family of four that was camping in a recreational area, and one broke into their RV and tore them absolutely to pieces. This was back in the 80s. And also the same thing happened in a campground in California. A group of five or six people were absolutely torn to pieces, and the creature even turned over a huge dumpster.
So is the creature just naturally vicious, or do they get upset easily, or do we know?
We really don't know. There have been a few encounters where people were not killed, but they had extreme fear from these creatures. They sensed that, you know, their lives were definitely in danger, and their dogs would be absolutely terrified, even, you know, really like, you know, pit bulls, those kind of dogs are absolutely terrified of them too. And one lady that had the footprint that was found on her farm, she had one try to turn a horse trailer over on top of her, and that horse trailer would have weighed around at least 8,000 pounds. So that just shows the strength and the meanness that they can display. They're totally unpredictable. You don't know if you'll live or not if you're encountering one of these.
Do they travel alone, Robert, or do they travel on a pack?
Well, they actually have pods where they associate. We feel that they actually are groups of them, small groups, and they do also have the ability, based on Leslie's research, to procreate. And the thing that I like to bring out is the story is a lot more than just about the creature. The paranormal side of it, in terms of the creature, there's a lot of unanswered questions, and we'd like people, that anyone that has a report or anyone that knows anything about this kind of an attack, that they'd get in touch with us. Our email addresses are in the back of the book. And, of course, Leslie has a nice Facebook fan page put up for Lycandroids as well. But
yeah, I have an email here from somebody in Kentucky. He said they started reading it early in the evening, and they couldn't put it down until after 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So you're getting good reviews. How do they find this book? Is it on Amazon?
Yeah, that's the best way to get the book, is through Amazon. And, you know, one of the things we encourage people to do is to pass the word around if they feel it's a good read. And we also appreciate hearing from them. Like, we've had a number of people contact us and say they really enjoyed the book, and they were recommending it to others. But the book has a lot in it in terms of, you know, there's action, there's a love story involved, a couple of lovers that are separated by a distance, a large distance. There's
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, and there's even a mention,
a little inside
there
comment there, folks.
Yeah. There's even a mention in there of Jerry Pippen on the talk show circuit.
Yeah, I notice I'm in this book. That's one way to get me to do the interview.
Well, we appreciate the publicity and the interview a lot, Jerry, and we also appreciate the work you're doing and the work that everyone's doing there with the station there, and all the hard work that goes into putting on a show like you guys do on a regular basis. And I know you've got a good audience, and they appreciate it as well.
How come the media doesn't discuss this much?
I don't think they really know anything about it. Really, the closest it's come out, you know, other than this book, you know, David Pilatus wrote the missing 411 pair of books about all the strange.
Tell our audience about David Pilatus. I know George Knapp did something about him,
mm-hmm.
but.
Yeah, people are disappearing in a lot of these forested areas, particularly if they have rivers in them, disappearing under very unusual circumstances. And some of the odd details even involve their clothing, where the clothing may be removed and carefully folded, but yet the bodies might be chewed to pieces, all the bones crunched down to like tiny little pieces. So you know it isn't a human that's doing it. And that odd connection with the clothing, again, you know, refers back to an indication it may be one of these creatures doing it. And there may even be something almost even interdimensional, actually, about this lycanthroid creature. And, you know, when these missing 411 cases, a lot of times, too, the people disappear so suddenly, almost like it's impossible that they could have disappeared so close to people, which indicates, you know, it may be some kind of an interdimensional situation. And, you know, combined with the oddness of the lycanthroid, I think there may be very possibly a connection between the two.
Yeah, Robert, you mentioned Dulce. What's the connection there?
Well, we actually have the genetic lab where the creature is engineered being located in Dulce under the mesa there. And it's a carryover from Operation Paperclip with a Nazi remnants from a secret bio lab that develops the creature and goes through a number of generations. One of the things we attempt to do is to put a person in a frame of mind. You know, we're so used to the amenities in society of having power and electricity and telephones and computers and everything that the book tries to put an individual into a position where they're looking at the world as it is in 2014, which is not that far off, after the Freedom War has occurred. And these creatures are already out they were in the process of being tested and released at the time the Vendetta virus brought down the computer network of the world. And part of the story involves even an attempt to come up with even a fifth generation. We're actually in the fourth generation set in the story, the third and fourth generation of the creature. And they have already chipped the society at large, and the creatures have the ability to use the chip in finding and identifying its victims. So I'm not going to say it's a horror story, but it certainly has a lot of twists and turns that gives it the drama.
Sounds like it'd be a good movie, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it would be a great.
Mm-hmm. So. Anyway, Leslie, have you had any people contact you since the book came out and said, "Yeah, I've seen one of these things," or if you get close enough to see one, is that terminal?
No, some people have seen them and survived because they've been either in a vehicle where they could escape, or they saw them at a distance, or maybe they were in their house and saw it, you know, back at the edge of their property. There's different instances, you know, that people have been able to survive and actually see one of these things. But, you know, that's another reason why I really wanted to write the book was because so many people go out camping, hunting, fishing, you know, that sort of thing, and they're just not aware these creatures are out there. And the way these vast numbers of people are disappearing in these state and national forests, I really thought people ought to be aware of it, and there have been at least two children that have disappeared, you know, at scout camps. And, you know, you can only watch so many children that closely, and the way they disappear so quickly, I really thought people ought to have at least an informed decision, you know, as to whether they really want to go out into the woods again. particularly if the woods have a river, because it's the most common way to see these.
Why do you think they are close to a river, just because it's convenient? Water, et cetera?
Well, I guess they just want to be near water. You know, it's just part of a survival thing. Mm-hmm. But they're usually seen like around rivers, sometimes marshes, but also in cornfields, around farms, ranches. Some sightings have been in residential neighborhoods.
Now, I know when you and I worked together a little bit, you were always talking about Florida. You used to like to go down there a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Is a place like Florida exempt from this, or do these creatures go down there too?
I would say they're pretty much all over North America, and I wouldn't say any place really in the Western Hemisphere would be safe. But in North America, and well, in the United States, there have been more sightings from, like, say, Michigan, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kentucky, Tennessee, Georgia, Louisiana, Texas, Oklahoma, New Mexico, Arizona, California, and other states. But that's been where a lot of the sightings have come from. But also they've been seen, like, in England, France, possibly the Philippines, Norway. I'm sorry, Finland, yes.
Yeah, I wonder how they got procreated around the world like that. That adds to your theory, I guess, that it might be interdimensional.
Yeah, good question. Although there really is a strong possibility it could be Operation Paperclip generations of these creatures from the original out of Dulce. Really, that's one reason why we included that in the fictional story. Some of this may not be totally fictional.
Robert, is he still with us?
I'm here, Jerry. You
good? Yeah. We had a thunderstorm going on. I didn't know. Maybe we might have lost you. I don't know. And you originally used to hang around the White Mountains out in Arizona. Now you're in a whole new group of mountains. Did you ever hear any stories about something like this happening out there in the White Mountains? I mean, I know you were pretty well connected with the environment out there.
Well, you know, I really wasn't aware of this creature at all until Leslie and I started discussing it. And the more that I learned about it, the more it made me want to go ahead and develop a story that could put the creature in context. And it's been a challenge to get the book out and to be able to tell the story in a way that people can enjoy reading a book. It's not your typical disclosure book. It's a much more fictional presentation with a lot of drama. And, you know, there's pain and there's loss and there's suffering, but there's also hope and joy and a love story as well.
It's an entertaining story. Robert basically came up with a storyline, and every night I couldn't wait to hear what happened next myself. I think it's a great story. I think it's very entertaining.
Sounds like this has been a labor of love.
It was fun.
In more ways than one, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a fun project, yeah.
Yeah, and they can get this at Amazon. And they put your name in there, Robert Miles or Leslie Mitz. So they could probably find it. But get the title again.
Yeah, it's like
androids. Like androids. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's Super Soldiers in the Freedom War. Maybe Leslie can spell that for people as well.
Yeah, even if they just type in Like Androids, LycanDroids. Or just our names, Robert Miles or Leslie Mitz, would even bring the book up.
Well, keep us informed on how this goes. And have you had any reports of these creatures recently? Since this book came out?
Not recently, but we're preparing, hopefully, to go on to an expedition to an area where we know that there's quite a number of these living there. And we're hoping to have it equipped where it'll be safe to where the people will come back out alive. But we're hoping to get...
Are you two planning on going?
No, I wouldn't go. No way. No, these will be people with a death wish.
You know me, Jerry. I'm always up for an adventure. So, you know, there's quite a network of people, as you're probably aware, that are following these kind of strange creatures. And there's groups of people out there that are looking for the Bigfoots. And in some cases, they're encountering stuff that isn't just Bigfoot related. And so just the resource side of the story, Leslie can tell you some of the facts that contributed to the story, because she has that, she's been gathering that data for a long time. And it wasn't easy to gather the data as well. Maybe you can talk about that, Leslie.
Yeah, it was really hard to track down much information, but there are several guys in particular, J.C. Johnson, Bart Nunnally, and Ben Peavler, that know probably as much about this as anything, because they're into research on the cryptid creatures, you know, unknown strange creatures, and the Bigfoot and all that. And they're brave, and, you know, they're wanting to find them, get proof also. So hopefully with those guys and maybe some others, we'll be able to get some definite evidence so people will see these things are for real, very dangerous. And again, I would caution people to think twice before going out into a remote wooded area, especially if it has a river. And I love to go camping. I love the forest, but I will not ever do that again. Never.
Well, now, when you get that expedition put together, let me know.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to go, but I want to get the want to cover it.
Exactly. I know. I'll be hanging with you, and we'll see them when they come back.
Yeah, we'll let Robert go.
Yes.
Well,
yeah,
back
of the book, we were hoping to get an armored vehicle. I kid you not, with gun ports. I mean, these things are dangerous. I mean, they can tear a vehicle apart. So
is there any evidence they prey on things besides humans?
Well, they do kill livestock, too, yes. Horses, cattle, they'll attack anything. Grizzly bear, I mean, you know, nothing is sacred. They'll kill anything.
So a lot of these cattle mutilations up around Dulce might be connected to this.
If they're torn to pieces, yes. I mean, because they just seem to enjoy killing for the sake of killing.
And, you know, they don't sound like nice creatures at all. If they're interdimensional, that opens up a whole new ball game. But we talk about Bigfoot and UFO connections. Any UFO connections to these creatures?
We really don't know.
From the standpoint of the story, we do have some UFO aspects to it. There's an aspect of the book that deals with what we call the visitors, and with part of the plans for what people would tend to say would be the New World Order, although we don't call it so much that in the story. But there's a connection there that there's an off-world interest in this planet, and the creatures are actually dangerous to even the off-worlders. So that adds another twist into the story itself.
You know, I brought up the subject of UFOs, and we'll get back to the book here in a moment, but both of you are interested in this subject, and so am I. What's got your attention these days, Leslie? You're really up to speed on most of the stuff. What kind of stories are you interested in the UFO field? What's events or whatever?
Oh, my, in the UFO field.
Yeah, we've talked about a few things over the years, but has anything caught your attention recently? Probably have been too busy writing this book.
Yeah, well, I try to stay up on things. I'm still interested in UFOs in the direction of the U.S. Navy Space Command Solar Warden, you know, oh my goodness, that young boy over in England that uncovered that they've been giving him hell over, what's his name? You know who I'm talking about. You know his mother and everything.
Yeah,
Jerry McKenna.
Yeah, the one that they're wanting to extradite over here to prosecute him.
Gary McKenna.
Yeah, exactly, him. So he, you know, apparently tapped into something because he found the off-world, off-terrestrial, you know, crew and all that sort of thing. And Richard Dolan has done some research, too, into that. And so I just wonder how much of what we see out there as far as flying hardware really is ours, you know. So that's
kind of... And Robert, what about you?
Well,
what's got your imagination these days?
I'm interested in the entire field, and as you know, I always have been, ever since we did Fast Walkers and the Open Final.
Yeah, and we had a lot of fun with that, and you that was a labor of love, and that's been a very successful project for you.
Yeah, it's been a successful project, and like anything, it took a lot of time and energy to develop it. But we had a lot of good support from, you know, just about everybody out there in the field to bring that project to fruition. One of the things that will help us on this book, of course, is spreading the word, because it's hard if you don't have a Hollywood budget to promote your work out there in a field where there's so much stuff being published these days. So we
We in the media want too damn much money.
Yeah.
What about UFOs? You still keeping up with them?
Oh, you know, I follow it as much as I can, Jerry, and it seems to me that the whole society that we live in today is operating under the illusion that there's not a really vastly superior and sophisticated network out there going on. And I've always contended that there exists another whole level for the people in the power elite, that they have privy to this information and they're not about to share it with the masses. And, of course, the UFO side of that, as Leslie's indicated, a lot of the stuff that we see and we hear about and the things that we talked about in Fast Walkers, you know, can be attributed to this senior order that maintains the secrecy. And of course the whole disclosure movement is trying to bring that wall down, but I don't see a lot of success with that. Do you?
Well, you there's so many things happening. It's almost everything in the UFO field, and it's really not just limited to UFOs. It's the way the media works these days, because we have so much proliferation of media. Is you get these big stories, and the stories that we talked a little bit about this a little earlier of Lee Spiegel and Grant Cameron. You know, you get these gangbuster stories, and nobody pays attention, and then another one will catch fire, and the one that catches fire really gets some attention. Before you really get to investigate it, you got something else coming up. Don't you guys think the UFO field's really changing a lot? I mean, there seems to be a lot of things coming out. We talk about disclosure. Maybe we already have it.
Mm-hmm.
We're just not paying attention.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, it looks to me like we probably got as much disclosure as we're ever going to get, unless somebody happens to turn up something that really proves beyond a shadow of a doubt, and it gets the attention of the media.
Yeah, that's true. You guys taking a break before you do another book, or what? I guess you're going to follow up on this one and actually get these expeditions to go out and find one of these things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're working on the development of the second book, and the first book leads into what could very easily be a number of books in the series. So
I mentioned a movie. It sounds like maybe you have a TV series one.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
we've suggested,
we've had a little interest on the part of a Hollywood person in the story itself. But, you know, Jerry, after all these years in the business, just like with you, you know, these big budget projects, you know, a lot of people talk about them, but when it comes to the time to have the money to do the project, it's a difficult thing to do. That's why with this book, we went ahead and we self-published using CreateSpace. And I think that I would recommend to anybody out there that's got a story to tell to just go ahead and do it. And, you know, it's going to take a lot of persistence on our part to get the word out there. about the book and the story, but the story itself is a good read. And for those that are interested in this type of a creature, it's an excellent read.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, next Monday, on our Monday night show, we have Stan Gordon on, who has written about the strange things happening in Pennsylvania. And Nick Redfern will also be a guest. And he's dealt in some of these things in cryptozoology. Mm-hmm. So I might bring this up to these guys. There may be something that they've ran across investigating they hadn't really locked in on it, you know. That's one thing you guys are doing with this book is calling attention to, and there's no doubt about it, when you have a mainstream reporter like George Knapp doing stories about people going into the National Forest and not coming out.
In the cover-ups, yeah.
Yeah, and, well, yeah, but in the Forest Service, they figure it's their mission not to protect you as much as to keep people coming.
Well, it's pretty strange, too, when they call in Green Berets to do a search for a missing person, which is highly unusual. So it makes you wonder, you know, are they aware that they're really there to search for an extremely dangerous creature? Green Berets are highly unusual. They also did the same thing with that case in Finland. They called in their equivalent of Green Berets to do a search for just a missing berry picker.
Well, tell me about that case in Finland a little bit.
Well, it was just a berry picker, and he was with another group, but he wasn't extremely close to them. And he had a cell phone, and he called for help. He was totally freaked out, and they immediately started searching for him and couldn't find him. And it took them 2 weeks to finally find his body, what was left of it. And
so it was mutilated.
Yes, and where they found his body, it was really close to where he disappeared, and they couldn't figure out how his body could be there, and they never did see it. And in his case, too, his clothes were carefully folded and left there, and while they lost contact with him on his cell phone. The whole thing was very strange, but yes, they brought in the equivalent of Green Berets. So that's why I think
Robert, it sounds like these creatures are playing games with us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're extremely intelligent based on what we've been able to find in our research. They certainly are intelligent, and in addition to that, they have adaptability to the environment far greater than a human. And they have the strength of,
winter and very cold climates does not stop them from doing anything.
Nothing does. They're totally adaptable to anything, any kind of climate, food, anything. They'll live on anything. And so they would make the ideal super soldier. They're about unkillable.
So if I get the drift, and I haven't read the whole book yet, I apologize, but I've been looking at it, and it's a great read from what I've read. And I've got several emails here. It's people saying they couldn't put it down. The super soldier aspect is somebody training these things to act on their behalf?
Well, they've actually been, as far as the book goes, they've actually been genetically bred and created, designed, and turned into that type of a hybrid creature that is answerable at the time when the internet was in existence. Remember, our setting is in 2014 after the internet and all the computers are down and lost communication. So essentially what has occurred is these creatures have been developed and were put out in the field for testing in a number of areas of the world. And then with the loss of the computer network and the ability to stay in communication with their creation, the designers and the masters of these things are suddenly out of touch, and the creatures are on their own, left to survive and adapt and raise havoc in the different regions of the in this case up in northern Arizona and in the Chattanooga area. But there's a lot of truth in the book. It's now, we bring in a lot of elements besides just the creatures. We bring in the elements that, you know, all of us are confronting in our day-to-day lives of just existence. So everyone that picks up the book. We tried to write it in such a way that it would appeal to a general population, not just a core group that are interested in this type of a creature.
Okay, our time's up here. We urge people to check Amazon for Lycanthroid, Super Soldiers, and the Freedom War. And it's the first in a series of books, right?
Hopefully.
Okay, thanks very much. You got any comments? We got to get the clock's got us here, Robert. We're not unfamiliar with that element of broadcasting.
Right. Just want to thank you and thank everybody there at Inception Radio for a chance to do the interview, Derek. And good luck to you and to your shows.
Okay, and Leslie, maybe we'll do something again, but it sounds like Robert's keeping you busy.
Well, we're just basically staying busy, but we just enjoy your show and glad to help you anytime. You do a great show, Jerry.
Thank you very much, both of you, and I appreciate it. Thanks very much for listening. Joe Champion in Chicago and Jane Swartley in Boulder, our producer. We appreciate all the help we can get. So until next time, thanks for listening. Until later, cheers.